the past few years, society has seen an incredible rise in artificial intelligence technology, a development that has forced almost all fields to adapt while sparking global debate about the role of artificial intelligence in our lives. In late 2022, OpenAI released ChatGPT, a generative artificial intelligence tool that, as of August 2025, hit a benchmark of 700 million weekly users, as astutely noted by Stanford University's 2025 Artificial Intelligence Index report, AI is rapidly moving from the lab to daily life. However, artificial intelligence is just the latest technological change that has led society to readjust our ways of living. In the past century, changes in telecommunications, media forms, transportation, agriculture, computing, and health technology have redefined our systems and habits. In this podcast series, Control, Alt, Innovate, Perspectives on Technological Advancements, this uni-high oral history project sets out to understand how the rise of new technologies have impacted our lives over the past century. From uni-high, I'm Karina Berchanu, a member of the class of 2028. In this podcast, Understandings of New Technology, Artificial Intelligence, we shift our focus to technological changes happening today, particularly in artificial intelligence. As a scientific discipline, artificial intelligence, now commonly referred to as AI, can be traced back to computer pioneer Alan Turing and his theory of computation in 1935. The field focuses on how computational systems can perform tasks related to human intelligence, including learning, decision-making, perception, and problem-solving. In the past decade, research breakthroughs and advancements in computational power have fueled dramatic improvements in natural language processing, image recognition, and problem solving, among other applications. Artificial intelligence heavily grew in popularity among the general population during the early 2020s as more companies produced models and increased opportunities for individuals to experiment with AI. However, given AI's relatively new appearance in the public sphere, many may lack formal knowledge of the technology. Therefore, we first interviewed Yang Wang and Yun Huang, Champaign-Urbana residents and University of Illinois information science professors who currently focus their research on human-computer interactions and artificial intelligence to better understand an expert's perspective on this technology. They studied computer engineering in China and later met as PhD students at the University of California, Irvine, while playing badminton. Now married, they have conducted research at Carnegie Mellon University, Syracuse University, and since 2019 at the University of Illinois. Professor Huang describes what compelled her to study computer science.
I like to create things. I like to design things. When I applied college, my major, I choose the CS as the first one because it's tough. Everybody think it's tough. I want to just show I can do the tough things. Then my last major, I choose design. I really like design things. So now I feel like my work actually combines computer technologies plus design, which is designing software, designing interface, designing visual effect, which is really aligned with my original interest. I didn't realize I was so much into computer engineering until I came here, until I started my own research. I realized, oh, I love my major. The best part of that, right now, I think I love to study how humans interact with machines, how we can build machines for the good of the society.
Professor Wang also became interested in human-computer interactions as an undergraduate in China.
The one subject I really liked in college was actually software engineering. I think that was the only thing where you had to consider the people. Everything else is either just straight up hardware or software algorithms, data structure. But software engineering was the only subject where you have to worry about people, because they taught you the process in which to develop software. And it, of course, involved people. So how do you manage that process? I found it really interesting where that's the only one that touches both people and machines.
Given their shared research interests, Professor Huang and Professor Wang now co-direct the Social Computing Systems Lab, or SALT Lab, a coordinated research effort at the University of Illinois to understand how people interact with computing systems that involve both social and technological aspects, such as the internet, social media, and more recently, certain artificial intelligence tools. Recent projects in their lab include designing artificial intelligence systems to create more inclusive social and academic learning environments and evaluating cybersecurity concerns of emerging technologies like wearable devices. In their personal lives, both professors have also lived through profound technological change, such as the introduction of the internet and cell phones in the mid to late 1990s.
Yeah, flip phones. You would fold it, I remember. You open up and then you can call. But what's funny about the phone is that I remember it was my freshman year I got it as a gift from my parents. And it was, at the time, it was not very common among my peers. It almost was a status thing. Like, if you were studying in a classroom with, you know, all the students, and all of a sudden, if your cell phone rang, everybody will look at you and say, wow, this guy's rich.
Professor Huang also reflects on the differences between the first widely available version of the World Wide Web versus the web used today.
In the first version, it's more like content created by whoever created the websites. And then it's fixed, it's static, right? You don't change it a lot. And it's not changed by users who view the content. But gradually with Web 2.0, we call it user-generated content, like Wikipedia or social media, Facebook, right? So a lot of the content or the majority of the content is created by whoever used the websites. Mm-hmm. So that just gives a totally different ways of using the internet. Your purposes of using the internet is not only to consume the information, but also being a producer. So right now, because social media, because mobile computing, so you generate content using multimodality. You can upload pictures, create videos. It's just more diverse.
Advancements in convenience and portability have also changed how consumers engage with today's technologies, as Professor Yun Huang describes.
Many times when I text email, I send emails while I was walking. I listen to audiobook while I'm doing other things, doing kind of like cleaning the dishes, things like that. So multitasking a lot what I'm doing here. But in the past, everything is connected to the desktop machine. So you only do the work when you're on the table.
In the university lab, Yun Huang and Yang Wang's research focuses on understanding the relationship between the social and technological aspects of various computing systems. They describe their day-to-day activities in order to stay at the forefront of this dynamic and continuously changing field.
We had regular meetings with students and with collaborators on projects. So most of the time it's project-driven. We have a deadline, right? We have a life cycle for a project. We develop new ideas and we read papers, because whenever you propose something new, you always need to know what is given, what is done right now. So you have to read what has been done from scholarly works, and then read news articles and new phenomena, new social phenomena or technology innovations. You have to be aware of the industry innovations as well.
So we teach technology-related courses in the university, and then in addition to that, just those research activities.
In the past, artificial intelligence technologies have been largely confined to academic spaces. However, recent years have seen widespread integration of AI-based solutions into the lives of ordinary citizens. Examples include Apple's Siri, Google Maps routing algorithms, and OpenAI's ChatGPT, launched in November 2022.
I think the major changes happening last year, like everybody is more democratic now because everybody can use generative AI solutions right now. So in the past, I used to think about when we can get this personal agent that you can talk to and he understands you. He understands your emotions as well. But now I think if you look at all the offsprings of the AI-based technologies, many of them have the intelligence in the sense, the level of understanding humans' input with great emotional understanding plus knowledge-wise, they can share with you, they can answer your questions very well. So I think we're very close to get very good personal agent very soon.
Professor Huang also describes an example of how an artificial intelligence-based system similar to the personal agent previously described could be employed to solve social issues.
So let's say I have one project about creating AI-based solutions for community members to report safety incidents to the police departments for help. But a lot of people, they don't feel comfortable to talk to the police agencies over the phone. Or in the past, when I interview some of the victims, they have autism or they have some other social anxiety. They just didn't want to talk to people. So that has a huge barriers for community members to get help. So now we are creating this AI-based solutions that is a chatbot. You can either call or you can either text. And then it replies you asking the question that a human dispatcher actually would ask. So it just lowered the barrier and make the service available anytime. Also, it can provide emotional support. Like many times, if you feel like you don't receive the support from the service provider, because the service providers, they are very overloaded. They have a burnout from all kinds of calls. So that's why they may not say, I'm so sorry to hear that, right? Those kind of emotional support may be missing from the human dispatchers. But when you use our system, you actually get some level of emotional support, even though some people may not prefer, may feel like this is machine. I don't like to be talking that way. But in reality, people still feel that could be helpful.
However, using artificial intelligence in a safety incident reporting system also comes with significant risks due to the lowered presence of human connection. Professor Huang suggests a way to implement the system while mitigating this risk.
We're not saying we're replacing the human dispatchers. So this is driven by several challenges. One is we're short of human dispatchers. If you go to police department or 911 call centers or nationwide, you will realize that there is a shortage of labor. People don't want to go that stressful job. When you want to call, when you want to reach to some help, you don't get any so many times. So that's why providing this technologies to address the labor shortage. So the other one is we're not forcing you to use it. You always have the option. You can call the human dispatchers. You can talk to real humans. If they're not available, you can always get similar support from machines.
Developing and deploying such a system would require many technical considerations, including evaluation, testing, and AI governance. Professor Huang shares his insights on this matter.
In terms of my research, I'm more looking at how can we better engage the population with AI. One example is these AI systems can behave in different ways, but there's always this risk that AI is going to be so intelligent that's just going to place human. And that's kind of the ultimate risk. And one of the things we were looking at in terms of research is to see how can we better engage just ordinary people in governing how AI systems should behave.
Another potential application of artificial intelligence with enormous social implications is in teaching. Tools like Khanmigo, an AI-powered teaching assistant built by the founders of Khan Academy, offer personalized and instantaneous guidance on a student's work. Professors Huang and Wang discuss some of the pros and cons to the role of AI in education and the impact on students and teachers.
I see it definitely both sides, but I think I'm not afraid of letting AI to teach for me. But I think the huge part of teaching is the human communication by hearing what your emotions, your excitement about different things. Teachers can adapt their content for individual or for the group as well. I think a major part of my classes is students spare some time in the discussion session for each lecture, right? For each session, for each class. So that way they not only learn from one instructor, but also from their peers. So they can see different perspective. I think that is very important. That is probably not be replaceable by AI so far, even though we can simulate peers using AI still. Okay. But I think that human touch is not replaceable.
Hopefully we wouldn't be replaced before we retire.
Well, I have the confidence that we always can bring something new. Whenever there's new thing happens, humans can always bring something new in response.
Professors Huang and Wang also understand the inherent risks in developing artificial intelligence technologies.
If you see AI can simulate humans now, then they can simulate both good things about human, but also bad things about human. So you can see AI can function as a bad actors on internet. That could be very bad. That could be risky. So that's why we not only developing for goodness, but also be very cautious about the capabilities of AI for doing malicious damage to the society.
I think the biggest risk is AI, or what they call general artificial intelligence. It gets to a point where it's so intelligent, it is self-governing, self-learning. You can write this AI by human, but the AI will just learn by itself, which is already happening. And to the point that it will essentially get out of control of human governance, and then the AI might do evil things.
Another implication of the current advancements in artificial intelligence is that these technologies could or have already developed consciousness.
I don't have the direct evidence to make that call at this moment. I think in order to answer that question, we have to define consciousness clearly, but even that term is very complicated philosophically, psychologically, or even scientifically, I think. So I don't think we can answer it right now, but I actually think it would be nice to have a super intelligence that is conscious, but conscious for the social good at large, not for individual. So I'm not afraid of that intelligence at all. I think whatever is meant to be is meant to be.
Yeah, I think for me, this is inevitable. AI will have conscious. If it doesn't have it right now, it will, probably quite soon, whether I like it or not. And I'm also not afraid that it has consciousness. Again, if it's doing something good.
Like awareness, if you say, do you have awareness? Awareness about what? And then I think it's about when we say identity, when we say human rights or ethical concerns, who's the ethics? We have to be very aware like what we're defining. Something we're commonly defined right now may not be optimal for the society. So there is always evolving definition.
While researchers in academia and industry have been implementing artificial intelligence-based solutions in a wide range of fields, ordinary citizens have seen a widespread integration of AI into their own lives in recent years. While virtual assistants like Apple's Siri and Amazon's Alexa have existed since the early 2010s, their capabilities were generally limited to simple tasks like retrieving the weather or performing an internet search. Instead, large language models, like OpenAI's ChatGPT, created in 2022, offer broader ranges of capabilities in both personal and logical tasks. In January of 2023, ChatGPT surpassed 100 million users just 2 months after its initial release, becoming the fastest growing internet application in history. In February of 2025, ChatGPT had over 400 million weekly users and aims to have over 1 billion weekly users by the year's end. As mentioned by Professors Huang and Wang, artificial intelligence has become ubiquitous in our daily lives, a reality that has become apparent in our interviews with Champaign-Urbana residents. To understand how these technologies will impact the current and future society, we asked Champaign-Urbana residents about how technology has changed during their lifetime. Local Central Illinois farmer Dennis Wenger of Fairbury shares how the agricultural industry has incorporated artificial intelligence.
A lot of systems on the machinery are monitored already. There's input put in there for the parameters of whether you're combining the crop, telling you the moisture of the crop, and it's recommending you to slow down or to speed up a particular part of the implement. We do have driverless auger carts to unload our combines via a conventional tractor picked in the field with the technology. It's sitting in the field, and with the technology, you can tell it to come to the combine It knows how to take a path through the field that won't run through the standing crop. It'll come to the combine, allow you to unload the grain on it on the go, and then we'll go back to a base station.
Wenger's perspective on AI and farming aligns with ongoing work at the University of Illinois, an institution pioneering in modern agricultural technology research. Initiatives like AI Farms, which stands for AI for Future Agricultural Resilience, Management, and Sustainability, currently develop and investigate technologies for autonomous farming, livestock monitoring, soil health, and environmental resilience. Wenger isn't afraid of the changes that artificial intelligence could bring to agriculture.
AI to a farmer, he's always looking for a new tool, a better tool, and I think in most cases that's what we have to look at that as a tool. You hate to say you're going to limit the ability to use a tool, but it still is going to take a human being to be involved with the input into the AI product, and it's going to have to be monitored, and it's going to have to take a group of people. I think there's no one person or small group of people that can make decisions on that. If we just really try to use it as a tool, but not let it control us and figure out how to make sure that we moderate it and keep limitations on it.
Similar to advancement in agriculture, medicine has significantly improved patient outcomes with the introduction of new technologies like MRI scans, surgical procedures, and vaccines. College of ACES Professor Emeritus Keith Kelly, an immunophysiologist, describes the ways in which artificial intelligence has already continued this trend.
It already has impacted medicine, and there was one of the early reports that showed that AI was better at diagnosing lesions for breast cancer than what trained pathologists could do. They picked up lesions, cells that pathologists could not. So in terms of advancing in medical and sciences and health for all of us, it's going to be a big boon. It's going to be very helpful. I still consider medicine certainly to be an art as much as a science. I believe you need to talk to patients. You need to learn more about what's going on inside of their head to figure out what's going inside of the rest of their body.
Similar to Wenger, Professor Kelly is optimistic about the ways in which artificial intelligence might shape the future, though with a few technical considerations.
I think the sky's the limit, but I often told my students a phrase, garbage in, garbage out. And by that I mean, if you don't have solid data, then you're going to come up with conclusions that aren't really true. And so while AI scans the universe in terms of what's available, a lot of times what's available isn't necessarily a fact. And so if that gets included into AI's interpretation and what they do with it, then that bothers me a little bit. But I think those issues will be worked out as time goes on.
To hear more about technological change in the agricultural and medical fields, please check out our podcast on this series, Moving, Growing, Healing, How Technology Has Changed Fields of Daily Life. We also interviewed a group of Champaign-Urbana residents with backgrounds in computing and academia. Colleen Bouchel, who works at the University of Illinois National Center for Supercomputing Applications, or NCSA, worked as an original engineer on Mosaic, the first graphical web browser released in 1993. She describes how AI might change the field of graphic design.
I think it will change the field a lot, just as when people were able to buy their own desktop computers and create some of their own design items that in the past they would have hired a graphic designer to do. That really changed the field. And then graphic designers specialized in other types of design. And I think the same thing will happen with AI. There will be things that AI can do that will replace some of what a graphic designer may do right now. But then that just means the graphic designer is going to continue to specialize in other aspects of it. There are definitely extreme positives to what can be done, but then there are also things that could happen that aren't so great. And so the reality is they will probably all happen. And so how do we deal with the things that may be potentially negative? So I think there is a lot of potential. I think there are also going to be hiccups along the road that we're all going to have to figure out how to address.
Bouchel's perspective is remarkably similar to that of AI researchers and professors Yang Wang and Yun Huang. Although artificial intelligence may change how certain areas of work are done, Bushell suggests that humans will be able to reimagine their professions to adapt to this change. In Professor Huang's words, humans will always be able to bring something in response. Advancements in technology have also fundamentally changed how we store and access information. And historically, that has meant reimagining the role of the library. Open source internet resources, such as Wikipedia, released in 2001, have enabled individuals to access a near-endless supply of information from any device with internet access. Paula Kaufman, the first dean of libraries and university librarian at the University of Illinois, describes how the function of a library has changed following digitization and the internet.
Libraries in my day were places you went to get books and maybe ask the librarian a question if you couldn't find the answer somehow in your home encyclopedia, because we all had home encyclopedias. Today, you can do any number of things in a public library, and they're really considered to be community centers. The Champaign Public has now built the studio. They have between 225 and 250 kids a day who come over from Edison. So you can go and record your blogs and or your vlogs. They have fancy sewing machines. You can do your games. They have 3D printers and other kinds of equipment whose name I don't know and I'm not creative enough to use. But, you know, there's any number of things that you can do there.
Kaufman draws from her decades-long career as a librarian to give the following words of wisdom regarding technology.
Things will continue to change. I retired in 2015, so it was almost 9 years ago. And yeah, there have been many changes. I mean, we didn't even talk about preservation. So when I was born, no one knew why paper disintegrated. It was a series of experiments, really. I think it was at North Carolina, where they realized what was happening. Then we were faced with, how do you preserve what's on a CD-ROM? How do you preserve what's on a reel of tape? All of that has developed, and we'll have new technologies, and librarians will have to continue to figure out how are they going to access it. I mean, we've gone from owning journals to leasing journals. A whole different mindset. Everything is different than it used to be, and will continue to be different.
These differences have also led Ms. Kaufman to consider the potential drawbacks of today's technologies.
There are many positive things that I've talked about, but there are a lot of negative things. Difference in privacy. In my day, every movement wasn't tracked. We didn't have freedoms the way some of you do, but we also didn't have, you know, these horrible incidents that one hears about online. We didn't have people stalking us online. We didn't have bullying online. We had bullying in person, but we didn't have bullying online, which has to be really awful.
Perhaps change is the only certainty with regards to the future. And by engaging with these new technologies with intentionality, society can maximize their benefits while minimizing their risks. Even though the past cannot perfectly predict the future, valuable lessons can still be learned from historical events. Some interviewed community members expressed specific concerns about replacing certain human decision-making processes with artificial intelligence tools. Central Illinois farmer Dennis Wenger acknowledges that while he appreciates many of the advancements brought about by new technologies, he wishes that some technologies would have never been developed in the first place.
There's technology that you wish you could make it go away. We haven't talked about the nuclear advancements in warfare, especially, and it's been a part of our life from the 50s and 60s. I was young growing up then. I was not born yet when we did use a nuclear technology as a weapon, but I was close enough to it that it was on everyone's mind. And when the situation arose with the Cuban Missile Crisis, it was a big fear then that we now could really get into a nuclear war. And so we grew up with the signs on many of the public buildings that there were safe nuclear protected areas in case of warfare. And we had drills at school. We had drills, warning sirens put into place with the idea that we could survive a nuclear war. That was in the background for several years there and seemed to pass somewhat. But we still have to realize that that technology is out there and it could be used for so many nuclear things. And we're working with other technologies that can be a problem too. So we just don't want to move too fast. And we have to learn. And there may be other sources we'll end up going to, but a technology that's questionable, again, hydrogen use, hydrogen types of products in vehicles for cars and things like that, it's a potential. But again, there's a danger. It can be real efficient, but it can be very deadly.
Champaign-Urbana community members also suggested ways individuals and collective communities can navigate today's world amidst the rapidly changing technological landscape. Ann Reisner, an associate professor emerita in the Department of Media and Cinema Studies, believes the government could play a much larger role in ensuring that new technologies are properly regulated.
I would not want to go back to a time where I couldn't look up pretty much everything on the net that I wanted to know. I would not. That's just an amazing luxury. On the other hand, we could regulate it. There's no question. It might take a while. We might make some false starts, but we could do it if we wanted to. I'm just somewhat pessimistic right now that the U.S. has the capacity and its structure to actually go ahead and regulate it in a good way. But I firmly believe we could. Turn off TikTok after you've been on it for 10 minutes. That could be engineered in. They engineered in seatbelts. We could do it. This is a lot of profit incentive from very powerful people who are incredibly freaking wealthy who have interest in making sure we don't do it.
Colleen Bouchel reflects upon experiencing and creating the technologies that have shaped her life.
That experience of seeing new technologies come, so the browser, genomics, AI, seeing the new technologies come, watching them evolve, knowing that there are pros and cons, things that are going to be beneficial and things that are going to change in a negative way. I don't know, there's something about that that I find very interesting, and realizing how do we address the negative things. And so I think everybody tries as best they can, but I think what I've learned is that you can't control it. Once a new technology comes about that does have an impact, that really does change things, it's going to keep evolving. I do think that another aspect of my career or my experience is the multidisciplinary or the collaboration that can happen and the innovation that can happen when you bring different types of people together that just tackle a problem. And the other thing would be that if you would have asked me, you know, a long time ago, would I predict I'd be involved in any new technologies, I would think, no, not me. You know, that happens with people way out there doing something different. But what I've learned is that people that work together and create these new innovative things are just regular people. You know, it's not like they're superheroes that you would have noticed that, oh, they're going to be the people that create something so dramatically different. That's not to say that they don't have something very special about them. I think something that's common between a lot of the people I've seen really be creative is that they're full of energy. They have good ideas, and they know how to work with people, and they know how, just from their personalities, to really make something happen.
No other period of history has experienced a pace of technological development like today. Despite the potential concerns, Urbana resident Margaret Lovell is optimistic about what the future holds.
So I'm trying to put myself back, not just at when I was a kid, but like, what would my grandmother think about all this stuff? So I grew up in a time when we believed that progress was limitless. So when I told you I wasn't surprised about the moon landing, it's because I had been conditioned to believe that we could do anything. We, mostly we Americans, but that we could do anything. And so while I had no concept of the specifics that were going to come along in my life, none of it has really surprised me, because I have been all my life set up, not in a bad way, to believe in progress, to believe in the future. And, I mean, I can look back and I could say, gosh, you know, it's too bad we don't have teleportation yet. But we might someday, you know, Scotty, beam me down. We might get there. So just faith. I have faith in progress.
From flip phones as a status symbol to artificial intelligence research at the University of Illinois, Professor Yun Huang and Yang Wang's personal and professional experiences with technological changes allowed them to give more informed context on artificial intelligence. Then, our community members helped further elaborate on technological changes in more specific settings, such as farms or libraries. By incorporating insights from experts and community members alike, we can reach more comprehensive understandings of how technological developments, particularly ones concerning AI, are experienced and interpreted. In previous podcast episodes, we explored historical periods of technological change, including advancements in agriculture, medical technology, news, and the internet. Thank you for listening to this Uni High WILL Oral History Project podcast series on technology and society. To learn more about the impacts of technological change on infrastructure, please listen to Moving, Growing, Healing: How Technology Has Changed Fields of Daily Life, our podcast on agriculture, medicine, and transportation. We also feature interviews with local Champaign-Urbana residents on our podcast, Logging On: Histories of Life Before and After Computers, and on our podcast about technological changes in news and entertainment. All podcasts are available to listen for free on the Illinois Youth Media website. For more information, visit will.illinois.edu/illinoisyouthmedia.